Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines and the stories that make the Elm City tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, about to begin here in the WNHA studio with the number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like the dairy-free goddess of our grassroots radio operation, the belle of our ball, and I mean that, like, deep in my heart. The man, she is the fun. She, the managing editor of the Inner City News and the host of WNHA's Love Babs program, Babs Rawls Ivy. And the flyest news hunter-gatherer this side of Fleet Street. You think people know what Fleet Street is?
Yeah.
All right. Do they know?
Because I love the whole idea that the Fleet Street icon was male British with a very fancy hat chasing like the political and crime scoops. We kind of update that just like pundits. Anyway, she is the flyest news hunter-gatherer this side of Fleet Street, star New Haven Independent reporter Markeisha Ricks.
Friday.
At the controls and soon to be on screen. Station manager and heavy D, Donald Trump, Dave Ote, Harry Dros, the man who keeps us on the air and is also the bravest man in New Haven.
Yay.
Did I miss anybody? Did I forget anybody?
Where's Norma?
Did I leave out anybody? Norma, we hope, is on her way in. Is anybody else in the studio? Anyone who just in a Claire's coma?
Hard side,
oh, I know who else we forgot. The preordained pastor and prophet of paradise,
oh,
our DJ of deliverance.
The
filial
pastor?
Force of fortuitous fomentation.
Yes.
The ouster of obstinance and ostentation. The savior of civility.
Mm-hmm.
The hurricane of heavenly homilies. The conqueror of cannabis of commerce.
Oh my
the
God.
Bright Jesus light in the New from. Haven light. The straight yeah. shooter from Bermuda.
Uh-huh.
The mystical and metaphorical man
Paul
on the money.
Paul could preach a sermon.
He could.
Yeah. The just-in-time judge of yeah. jackals and japery.
Yes. He's like, let's make it dramatic.
The sentinel of serenity, sincerity, and salvation.
Uh-huh.
The poobah
yeah.
of unparalleled political passion and perspicacity. The conquistador of cussing criminals. The weaver of wellness and wisdom. The mellifluous and meritocratic miner of melody. The plow driver of peace. The driver out of demons.
You know, we only have 40 minutes.
The liberated line Ooh. Of lucidity. The erudite earl of ergonomics.
Yeah.
The maniacal monarch of mercy. The blistering barbecue of brain-dead bozos.
Uh-huh.
Our prize bozo. Protector against pusillanimity.
Yeah.
The bodhisattva of battle rap.
Uh-huh.
The missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masses, shaman of the shoreline, potentate of 360 state.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He is the maximum mixologist, Joe Ugly.
Woo!
Of the Joe Ugly Show in the morning. Welcome,
in
sir.
Morning. You know what? This is too said. Much bromance.
I'll admit
too
it.
Much.
I'll admit it. I'm a Joe Ugly fan.
I thank you, sir.
And I'm glad you're all here
I'm
for Pundit Friday.
Fan.
So now, do we get in trouble if we do some gambling on air? Or what if the prize is just pride, if we don't get money out of the deal?
What are we gambling? I like money, though.
I like money, too.
Because you know what the fun thing about...
Christmas is coming.
The fun thing about making predictions as pundits
mm-hmm.
is that we don't really know any better than anybody else.
Right?
And
like
most of the time,
don't spoil it.
Let's not tell me. This is between us. I hope people at home, just turn down your radio for a second. We go mm-hmm. through this. So like, we don't know any better than anybody else. We always act like we do. We make our prediction 9 times out of 10, it's wrong. But 1 time out of 10, it's right. And that's the one we always remember and continue to feel. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself. The smartest people on the block. In that spirit, I challenge you folks to some punditry prediction gambling.
Okay.
Okay.
We got a little pool going here.
Yeah.
Okay. Pool of what?
Tony Harp has been mayor 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Uh-oh.
That whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a good run for a job like this. She's had one person in charge of economic development.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look over at Babs, you remember all this and Joe, mm-hmm. people who really made their mark on the city in that job.
Yeah.
They didn't last longer. John Sawyer.
Henry Fernandez.
Will Ginsburg.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't believe anyone else went over 5 years or much more, and sometimes less.
I think you're right.
And in that time, you could have a big impact. Henry Fernandez is why we have Gateway Community College downtown, why we
and
built
IKEA.
Up all this mm-hmm. IKEA mm-hmm. and all these LCI neighborhood housing.
And all these damn one-way streets.
John Ooh. Sawyer's how we got the downtown entertainment district.
Mm-hmm.
Will Ginsburg's why we got the 9th Square.
Mm-hmm.
So Matthew Nemerson is leaving, and you know he's leaving. He was kind of run out. He had enemies within the administration. He had a lot of fights with people outside it. He was brash. He had a strong idea what to do. He pushed the limit. And every other day, Tony Harp had listened to someone who had power,
Whine
influence,
and cry.
But you know, Matt did a good 5 years. And, you know, I don't think any of us agrees with everything, because he's someone who has a strong point of view, but he really oversaw a pretty broad remaking of our city from all this downtown apartment boom that was happening, and they guided it, in my opinion, well. They kept a nice square affordable housing. They got a lot of market rate housing on the rolls, some of it with affordable housing in. They got 11.4 acres in the hill, where for since 1986, no city administration could get built on. He found a really smart way, which is like, we don't have to make it all cookie cutter with straight streets, and we don't have to go through these years long expensive process of trying to redo utilities and streets. All of a sudden, boom, he got the right person in and they're building it. He got the College Street Music Hall. It was dark under all these years under a very strong, effective mayor, John DeStefano. Couldn't crack that. Yale had the property landlocked, the old Palace Theater, and Matt came in with a crew and figured a way around it, and before you blinked an eye, got it rebuilt to the College Street Music Hall. So Matt accomplished a lot. Got a lot of fights.
They're very busy.
He's gone now. Question is, who's coming next and what does it mean?
Ooh.
So here's what I'm wagering. I think
it's me!
Okay, so we got some scoops here.
That's real Ivy. Is that true?
But if you do, maybe you can get that apartment at the top of the Lexington building you've been wanting, the penthouse.
You talk about corruption. Let me tell you.
Like now you all have to leave.
You're ready for the corruption. Okay, so I want to have some wages here because none of us knows. Let's just know. There's no inside information. No one's been whispering in our ears about who's going to get picked. Right now, Mike Piscitelli is the acting development administrator.
How many jobs does Mike Piscitelli have?
He's going to be acting sanitation chief. He's going to be the acting ticket taker at the College Street Music Hall.
I feel like he's like outside of the he's outside of a parking lot taking tickets too.
He is.
I feel like he's so busy.
And he's going to be the acting pilot on Air Force One until they get someone for Donald
Trump. My God.
And in addition to that, he's the acting city plan director, city plan commission, and he was previously the number two in economic development. So obviously, when Matthew's leaving as of today, Matthew Nemerson, it made sense in the short term to have someone there who knows the job, doing the job, and does it well.
And who's also very calm. Mm-hmm. Mike Piscitelli is a very calm man.
So you got two people in the city government now who could step into that job and have been very successful working on big pieces of the job. One of them is Mike Piscitelli. The other is Serena Neal Sangiorgio, who grew up here in Dixwell, did a lot of really strong economic development work in New Orleans and Baltimore. So got her cred, got her experience, came back to New Haven and is now doing work like she overseen the Church Street South transition. She put together a lot of that Hill project. So she, Liberal City Initiative, which she runs, is part under development, does a lot of development. So either of them is very qualified to do the job. They bring very different styles. And there are a lot of pros and cons for each of them that don't have to do with them personally. For instance, one commenter wrote in, Mike Piscitelli does a really great job. He's now running city plan and economic development. And this one commenter, Kevin McCarthy, really follows government. He says city plan is supposed to regulate what development happens in the city. Economic Development Ministry is supposed to promote it. So his feeling is that if you're going to pick Piscitelli for a job, don't have him do both anymore. I'm not sure I agree with Kevin, but he knows a lot more than I do about that issue.
Okay.
Then another argument is city government for a long time has needed to be restructured. From time to time, you have to look at how departments work. So LCI, Liberal City Initiative, two very different things. Does code enforcement.
And development.
And it gets development going in neighborhoods, and some now, some neighborhood development, like in the Hill, that's big development. It's as big as anything else, right?
Yeah.
So one argument has been that LCI structurally should be broken in half, and this wasn't my idea originally, by the way. This was in the Harp administration. I think Tony Harp says she's even thought about this. Put the enforcement functions under the building department. Keep LCI development under development
under
itself.
Under development.
And then you just move Serena Neal Sandur up top to run that. Because she has, you know, she has, like Mike Piscitelli, she has lots of experience dealing directly with developers, directly with community people who have concerns about development. She's lived it. So that would be part of restructuring that way. And in the other case, it's part of how do you think? Because also, we have a budget crisis in our city in a sense that we don't always need as many
Is that
top
why
positions.
Mike Piscitelli has all these jobs?
No, it's because it could be. It could be. And also, it could be that it takes
Mike,
time.
You gotta wear many hats.
They don't move fast. Like, there are different styles of government. One is deliberative, like take a year to find a new police chief and have a lot of committees and get the person you thought you were going to get anyway, but have a lot of input. Or get a fire chief.
I saw that shade.
But yeah. here it is without shade, okay? And I always talk about this, Tony Harp. I feel she's right and I'm wrong. She's very deliberative. Take your time, get a lot of people at the table. I'm like, have them vote for you every 2 years. Talk to people all the time, but then just move. And I think I'm wrong, and she's right, by the way. So look at the fire chief. She got a good fire chief by taking a long time to have this process, right? So in this case, it was known that Matthew Nemerson was going to leave. Would you want to just bring somebody right in? And do you want to go on the inside? You got all these projects happening in town. Do you want to bring someone who's been working on them, either Mike Piscatella or Neil Sangiorgio, and bring them right in? Or do you want to make some hunt nationally for a while to get someone who knows a lot of development and bring them in? And do you want to cut those positions? Because when you rethink about government all the time, one thing you do is look at whether you have too much bureaucracy or too many different positions. Do you fold, like I was telling about that idea Tony Hart told us she was looking at one point, about folding, dividing LCI in half and folding the other two departments. Then you don't need as many top-heavy people when you're dealing with structural deficits.
Mm-hmm.
So I've talked a long time. What's your prediction? Who's going to get it and why?
Mm. Mike Piscitelli.
And why is that?
Because you always bet on white. No, I'm just kidding. Wow. I was kidding. No, oh my God. I didn't mean that. I kind of mean it, but
Tony Harp is African American, by the way.
I know what she is. She hires a lot of people. Too. Color. I know she does. She does. She does. I mean, I think you laid out a good case.
For
I think
either one of them, actually. For
either one of them. I just think whatever the style, I think it style will win over anything.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Style will win over anything. So depending
on very different styles. Serena's is more. She isn't like Matthews in the sense that. Nemerson's that she does get along very well with the developers and the political people.
Yeah.
She's very private opposed to public person, so she won't talk to the media a lot. She's got a lot of thinking going on from a lifetime of development.
Yeah.
And she will not...
And also from just being from here.
But, yeah. So when you do here, talk to her, you find out fascinating ideas, but she doesn't go for the limelight. But behind the limelight, she's tough.
She's a tough woman.
She lets
tough.
You know if you're full of it, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Michael Piscitelli will be more kind of genteel. Very nice man as well, and they're both very nice people. You won't find out that he thinks you're full of it until someone else tells you what he was saying when you left the office. I don't know how important that is.
You know.
Because I've had experience on both ends.
Listen,
both of them.
I say let black women run the world. But so there you go.
All right. So, and Joe, why do you think it's going to be Piscitelli?
I just feel because the guy is all over the place. I mean,
he is the go-to guy.
He's like the go-to.
If the department needs leadership, he's the dude that they choose that they ask to do more than one job.
I've watched him since Traffic and Parking when he ran that. He did a great job at Traffic and Parking.
Does he want this job?
I have no idea. When he was at Traffic and Parking, I watched how he took people who are difficult to deal with but had good points from the grassroots about transportation ideas and really listened to them. And made decisions with their input.
The thing about Mike Piscitelli is that the question is, as we're sitting around here saying that, you know, he did different departments. Is he a good go-to guy or is he a guy for one department? That's the real question.
That's why, you know, when you guys said it comes down to style, I actually believe it might come down to structure. Do we want to go the LCI route, divide it in half and restructure government that way and get the woman who's worked directly on these projects? And she is very good at making things happen.
I really like the idea of restructuring it
Neil Sangiorgio really makes things happen. Do we want to go and thinking of merging city plan and economic development? Maybe Kevin McCarthy has a view that not everyone agrees with and that might be a way you can bifurcate that job and have Mike Piscitelli, who's very good on how government works.
So I see it two ways. So if the city were to go the restructuring route in terms of restructuring LCI and splitting them up and splitting the responsibilities up, I would see that being a good fit under Serena's leadership. On the other hand, if I could see on the other side of like some combination, instead of, you know, to Kevin's point, I actually don't mind them working together if under Mike's leadership. Now, here's the thing. None of those people will ever lead forever.
Right.
So you change the structure and then you change the leadership.
That's a good point.
That the person who's leading it now thinks neither of those things work.
That's a good point.
But because Mike has had a hand in both the development world as well as the regulation world, because I think he's an urban planner by trade, like I think he can see the big picture. And so he can see not only the big, because I think about this in terms of Long Wharf and under Matthew's leadership that everybody's been involved in that.
Piscitelli's been involved in that.
He has, exactly. And Serena's been involved. Like everybody who's involved in that world in the city government is involved in shaping, along with the citizens of the city, like what could happen at Long Wharf. Mm-hmm. So they all have a piece of it. And so, you know, I think any one of those people would be a fine choice in the sense that they have the long-term view. I think Mike having that understanding of where the regulation actually needs to go, not just so something can be developed.
So you're saying city planning could be a good part of economic development.
It could be a good farm. I think our city so far has done a good job of those two arms working together. They don't work actually, in my mind, at cross purposes. They actually kind of collaborate and saying we need to modernize our regulation, not just so some developer can come in and develop whatever they think is cute today, but like for the long term, they all of them. I give them all credit because I think they all have been trying to focus on
And you
on
do
the
legally
long term.
Have a city plan commission that does that job of regulating to
Absolutely.
Whom the city plan director reports.
Mm-hmm.
And they can still do that job under yeah. your view. I guess my big concern is that, you know, we dump on government officials a lot, but most of them, almost all of them have such great motives and they work so hard
they
in
do.
The public interest. And when you have two talented people like Mike Piscatelli and Serena,
like, I think it's Nielsen amazing that we have such
and
wealth of talent.
I hope that they both come nice. Out of this in a way where they feel like, and this is a trick for running government,
yeah.
that they both
yeah.
won. They're both appreciated. Mm-hmm. Nobody got something at the expense of the other, mm-hmm. and they're
yeah.
going to still be a team.
Well, yes,
because we don't want to, and it's not good for the press because neither of them are like press hot dogs and they don't really tell us what's going on or even
which is
like,
refreshing
yeah 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 as long as they're really as long as they're not hiding which they don't hide
they don't
you know?
Hide like, right. that's the thing they don't hide
yeah. but they're not like fun for reporters to
they're
cover
not.
But they're
they really
but
don't
they do
enjoy
their job,
hot dogging
but they do their job very well. And, well, I actually think it's legitimate for some people in government to want to explain to the public what they're doing
yes,
so you understand
I believe.
And
I
they don't
I
go
agree.
Out of their way to do that but they're responsive when they're asked
but
that's not
some,
the important thing. It's less important than what they're like for the press is what they're like in the job. And they've both done very well and I'd hate to see us.
Let's have a litmus test.
What's the litmus test?
If you're going to bring another dollar store into the town, you're out.
What?
Dollar store? No, no, but this is
where's
you have to think about where retail goes.
No.
Because
I don't want
retail
to
these
one.
Days is either dollar stores or high-end stores.
But some dollar
no,
stores aren't
you know
all chunky.
Really
some of them are very nice, like the one downtown.
Yeah, one of them. But,
right,
and
one on Whaley's a dump, yeah.
Well, what I would like
But that's
to see,
where you need strong enforcement. That's where you need a city government that is actively enforcing
right.
the rules and making sure if you're going to bring a dollar store to it better be the best
dollar store
store
right.
ever. As if not, we're going to be in you, finding you, and dragging you into court every
yeah,
chance we get until you decide
get.
It's time
I don't
to leave.
I think we should do that. But here's the question. Are they both owned by the same company? Are the parent company different or are they different?
I think the two Whaley ones are. The upper Whaley
yeah,
and lower Whaley.
But they're not owned by the same ones that own the Family Dollar that's in Westville now.
Oh,
I haven't
okay.
been I haven't been to the one in Westville.
It's really nice.
In the news the one that was CVS?
Yeah.
So
let's get back to the
I'm looking at this. When you look at economic development and downtown New Haven or such, if you have one set of stores, it pretty much gives the brand for the city. It really does. And I would like to see a mix. They have those micro Targets, the micro Home Foods. I want to see more of those kind of stores come into town. Why not?
It would be interesting to hear from whoever gets to be in that position, whether they break up the departments in different ways or what have you. Like, what is their vision for what's possible for New Haven in terms, and what are the types of business? Because literally, like, not even just, you know, in terms of those, we have all these, like, new urbanist
right.
kinds of buildings that have empty storefronts.
Right.
And is the next person going to say, we actually need to get away from like housing
and
is
that
where
was a big
at,
thing.
Nathan
Emerson was
it.
Really pushing that image of
yeah.
everything had a store in the front, a few apartments above it and very dense. And I'm with you, Markeisha. I'm sometimes a believer in letting the market dictate because that's a symbol of the very legitimate critique that new urbanists bring to the old urbanism of the 60s, which is we got rid of those storefronts on the bottom and the apartments above, and that had mixed use and neighborhood life. But even Jane Jacobs herself, who came up with that point, said that doesn't mean that you completely draw that same picture every time 50 years later.
Exactly.
It means you remember that concept of mixed use and organic development from many actors.
I can go from mixed use for many things, but you know.
Exactly. And that, like, you might change the idea of, like, what does mixed use look like?
Right.
What you need is
right.
a regulations that undergird, like, it undergirds our ability to transform as a city instead of just going down one path as
Correct.
If nothing else in the world is happening.
Yeah. Once we get that cookie-cutter mentality, it just does not work.
And it's so funny about that is that's a cookie-cutter mentality that sees itself as being against cookie-cutter.
Exactly.
But then it came up with its
and
own
And so
right.
you need other people innovating about space. Like, I think about even downtown, some of the buildings, like, have been like transformed into co-working space because people don't really work in offices the way that they used
yeah.
to.
Right.
And that may not be coming back.
Right.
So, like, what is it that, like, looking at what people actually need, like, what they need in terms of housing, everybody can't live in a one-bed. I can be perfectly happy in a one-bedroom studio because I like small spaces, and I'm
but
a
But not everyone
But that's not
it.
Everybody's
right.
story. Babs
right.
is not going to live in a studio apartment.
No, Babs is penthouse at Alexion. I just get the whole floor.
And barring that,
yes.
she needs, like, 2,000 or 3,000 square feet.
No,
easy.
These
like, that's her ministry.
Yeah, that's another thing. The micro apartment things in the city. And I'm talking about the downtown area of the city. These micro apartments, after a while, it's like, come on. Where are the families?
And no to one your is encouraging
families
that,
to move downtown.
But
are
the
you
city makes
me?
More money when they're micro
to
downtown
Joe's
without kids.
To Joe's other
kids.
Point about that, I think another thing that we are doing that kind of drives me a little crazy is we're creating opportunities for people to rent. Right. We're not creating opportunities where somebody can own an apartment downtown.
Thank you.
Like, there are apartments that you can own downtown.
What?
I think they're in
but
University
you know what,
Towers.
Mark, Keisha,
but there's
though,
nobody here to buy.
You know why? Everyone who wanted to build those could get no financing.
That's
right
a shame.
Or wrong, they say the market doesn't exist and people aren't going to buy. They're going to rent.
How do they know the market doesn't exist and they don't even
show? Because, you were in lending. Banks do a lot of research on what's selling and what's not
no,
selling
no, no,
and
not
where
all
they've
the
lost
time.
Money.
Not all
but
the
sometimes
time.
They make a guess.
But I think we don't talk about enough about what's driving those conversations.
Right.
That there are people, like, what's actually driving the conversation about whether that's where the market... If we talk about the fact that people don't pay what they used to pay, that people don't have the job stability to actually own a home, then okay, yeah,
I
we can have
opposite.
That conversation.
I think it's where the market goes and when it's not coming back. People are mobile. They're not looking to own. They have a husband's working in New York, the other right here, or Hartford. They want some place for a few years. It'd be nice. They're not.
But you buy for a few years. We can do it.
They're not looking to own.
But you just raised a good point. When you're talking about how banks would not lend. No, banks create community.
The conditions,
They're the ones who create the conditions.
But they're in the business of staying in business. They're not going to get too far ahead of where people want to go.
No.
What
do you think bring back gentrification? What do you think pushed gentrification?
Yeah, but they're...
And what happens when that tide changes?
Right.
Because what we do know for sure is that the tide comes in and it goes out. Like, it changes.
Right. Babs, you had something to say on that.
I mean, I kind of like the idea of somebody being able to own an apartment. And then
I would
like people in New York own apartments
all the time, and you could rent them out or sublet them or whatever,
you
want
to
do.
Yeah, that's what they do at the Kelly House.
I mean, I would. I mean, I think we could handle some of that.
Right.
I'm not suggesting every apartment ought to be that.
Thank you.
But there ought to be some apartments that are built specifically with families
condos.
In mind
and
their
viability. Repeat that, please.
Families and viability.
Thank you.
And even
second,
not, like,
do
I'm someone who doesn't
want
to own a house per se, but if an apartment were in within my reach, I probably would buy that because I see myself as a city dweller.
Right.
And I think that I would like to be a city dweller long term. But there's no option for me to buy an apartment here.
I'm at this age bracket, right? Because my kids are damn near out the door grown. I'm 55. I don't want to live in a big house in my neighborhood now, right?
Right.
I want to be downtown.
And you don't want to rent the rest of your life.
Are
you
going to have a roommate on the Alexian penthouse?
No.
Okay.
No roommate.
You can visit.
She won't let me live alone.
In terms of Matt Emerson, I do think I agreed with what Mary O'Leary wrote in the New Haven Register today. I think his biggest victory, I named some other things, but I think she was right, was district. So there he had a big old abandoned busty bun. He wasn't the only one. He assembled a committee that really worked on it and cared, people like State Rep Roland Lamar, and they had an offer from an out-of-town developer who wanted to put a big supermarket there, right, by off I-91
that
on the state.
Been so terrible.
And it would have been the end of the world, but it was this guy who hadn't had a good tracker in how he dealt with us, dealt with cities like, you give me what I want or I'm out of here, but he had a lot of money and a track record. They gambled on two New Haven entrepreneurs who were successful in tech, one of them, David Salinas. The business was growing. So they had enough of a track record to gamble on him. But unlike this other guy, didn't have the same access to all that kind of money and all that kind of decades of development.
And he was trying to do something
but
that nobody else
had done.
But they
were homegrown, and they fit into a vision of the jobs we saw for the future at every level of tech and the kind of building community where they're going to, you know, they have a whole tech hub there now. And that thing is a big success, as Marquise has written. Filled
I'm
up
telling
fast.
You. It so looks
Emerson,
like a success.
So
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, as much
there,
as I disagree.
You go for a tour.
As much as I disagree with Emerson on some philosophical issues, he really had some successes there. But anyway, so get back to the gamble. So who's going to get that? But the third option is, are they going to pick someone from outside?
We're beyond the gamble.
But is it going to be Piscatelli? Is it going to be Neil Sangiorgio? Is it going to be someone from out of town, outside government?
I don't know.
You don't want to be smart.
Well, right now, the city is doing a lot of outside.
You
want
to talk about what you don't know?
Outside the
norm. No, don't.
But you're right. I don't know.
All right. We're all just a bunch of wusses. We can't
gamble. We're actually pundits who don't actually want to speculate.
Punditized.
We think we don't know, and we should wait to see what happens.
Yeah. And we are the Friday Pundits on WHHFM, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org on your home for community radio, running down the news stories of the week. So the news story, the week is going to end with a news story with which it's also going to begin next week.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
And that's the continuing battle over a civilian review board for the police department.
Oh, my God.
Very
so
quick summary.
This.
4 years ago, there was a referendum pushed by the new majority of the board of alders saying, we want a civilian review board with teeth because we had one, but it can't subpoena people. It can't really hold cops accountable for misconduct from the citizens. So that passed. But then for 5 years, they haven't created one because it turned out they didn't want to follow through on their one fundamental goal, which was to give it teeth. Someone talked them out of believing that it can't have subpoena power, even though the city's own corporation council says it can legally and other people in their workarounds. So now for the second time, the Alders are about to vote on a proposal to create a new version, which in some minor ways might not look like the old one, but in no way changes what the old one was.
Oh my God.
And there's going to be, there's an outcry to stop it. There's an anti-brutality activist are talking this afternoon. And what's interesting is the police chief and assistant chief agreed with the police critics and said, if you're going to do it, the community's got to trust it. It needs subpoena power. Justin Ellicker, who's obviously eyeing a mayoral run, he wrote a piece in The Independent this week taking the side of the protesters. What do you think should happen? What do you think is going to happen? And how do you think the people are going about it, Markeisha, in raising their issue? Are they doing it effectively?
It's that's such a leading question because you know how I feel about it. So, you know, so it's I noticed, I've observed an interesting gap in advocacy, if you will. And so when you think about, can you read my study box alone? There's an interesting a gap in advocacy. And what I mean by that is that, so you've had these people kind of intensely going to the Board of Alders, going through all this hearing, stating their case about why they need it, yada, yada, yada. Then you get to the last committee meeting of the Board of Alders where they basically kind of staring in their face and listening to them very perfunctorily and saying, all right, and I peep game. So an Alder asked a young man from Yale, he was like, where do you live at? Where are you from? And he was like, you know, I live downtown or blah, blah, blah. I'm a Yale student. He's like, oh, which it says to me, he's like, oh, you're not in my ward. That doesn't. You can talk. You don't live here. Is basically what that.
But most
that
of the activists
saying.
Are not from Yale. There are definitely some.
They're definitely not. But there Williams also is a core group of activists who are in.
Yeah.
Activism is what they do. That's what they're known for. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And again, you still are giving the Alders room to say. And Babs, you were an Alder. Mm-hmm. Would it make a difference?
And a police commissioner. Yeah,
would it make a difference to you if there were people consistently calling you saying before the vote? I believe in this issue. I care about it. This is what I think about. Like you might still vote no, but are you hearing from people? Because I feel like from what I'm getting from Alders is they're not hearing from people. They hear from this specific group of people.
I don't think they hear from people.
But they're not hearing from people. Nobody's
you would have heard from Emma Jones.
Nobody's in. And that's one Alder, though. How many votes are on the Board of Alder? Like, that was a group of committee. Had those committee members heard specifically from the people in their ward saying, I want this issue, it's important to me. If you vote against this issue, if you don't give me a civilian review board that is strong, that has subpoena power, I will make it my business to A, you won't get my vote, and B,
you're right.
I'm going to actually either run against you or get somebody to run against you or support whoever runs against you.
So, Markeisha, what I find raised by that point you're making, which I think is an excellent point, is on any issue, how we decide who is the public. Because usually on most issues, except for taxes, where people mindlessly just hate any tax increase while bringing up important points about it, on issues like this that matter, usually 90% of the public's not paying attention. Usually an Alder is not going to win or lose election based on what he or she does on an issue. So you hear from the people who care the most, and it might be affected the most, might not. And they speak up, and they have intelligent things to say. How do you weigh that in deciding whom do I have to listen to? And what am I motivated to do?
That's a tricky question with this board, because who controls this board? Like, what are their interests in this issue? Because if they have no interest in this issue, it's a dead issue.
I wish they would explain to us what they think, because they were the ones who made this happen in the first place. They got elected on agenda saying, we're going to make sure we have a civilian review board. I still keep going back to, why don't we just go to the police commission where everyone agrees there's subpoena power, and just create a civilian review board out of that?
The Board of Police Commissioners is a civilian review board. Yeah. These people do not work for the police department. Civilian means...
But they are not independent either. They should be, but they're not. They might have been in your day. I'm sure you were.
I mean, I don't... You know, listen, I think... I mean, if people really want a civilian review board, give it to them. Because I already know how it's going to go. People are not going... The time and commitment to serve will be overwhelming.
Right, that's always overlooked.
I'm telling you.
It's hard work.
They just, and I think
because you
want to
see it for the sake of seeing it. Get it. Please.
But I think on the flip side of that too, are people who want this so badly prepared for things not to go their way? What do I mean?
And that's
the,
yes.
The review board has to be independent. That yes. means it can't be weighted down by the people yeah. who even wanted it so
badly.
So
the minute they say, we don't see any instance of police brutality.
Or they sign with the police officers, people going to be mad.
They're going to be mad. And then we'll be back at square one. We must disband them and get another.
But isn't this the same thing that was going on when you were police commissioner? Did they have teeth in the commission where you could subpoena people?
No, yeah. We've always had police. Yeah. We always mm-hmm. had subpoena powers.
In 1977, it was the police commission that uncovered the wiretap scandal.
Oh, that's correct. That's correct.
But since then, I think that's the last instance of ever hearing
But the Board of Aldermen has police. I mean, the Board of Aldermen have subpoena powers, right. too. So they could effectively
that was
create
an
ad hoc committee.
Or lend a member who can use it, like Taisha
yes.
Walker.
They can't.
You know what you're saying about people being heard? I agree with you that it's unclear what'll happen with that. You know, Bill Saunders is a very outspoken critic of police misconduct. He's mm-hmm. an artist in town. He got arrested in a questionable case and a concert. And years later, he got to court to sue the cop. And the cop won. And he felt that he had really been heard. He praised the judge and he praised the process. And a lot of times people do, so I don't know how to predict it, but sometimes people do feel, if they believe a process, and that's why I think Anthony Campbell,
it doesn't
the
matter
chief,
if they believe in the
and
process.
Tony Reyes said, let's listen to what people are asking for a subpoena power, whether or not we would have designed that way. Because when people believe they're heard and they believe it's fair, they'll often accept the results more. So I think that's such dangerous. For instance, Donald Trump saying, if I were going to lose this election, it's not going to be fair.
I hear what you're saying,
so
Paul.
So that people won't have
but
the
I
result.
Don't think with
I'm
the
not disagreeing with you.
I don't think with the Civilian Review Board, I think once they get a decision that they are not happy with, that they will be calling for the heads of those people that are serving. Because right. it's inevitable.
Right.
Because every case
right.
of police brutality is not... Yeah. is not a case of police right. brutality.
Correct.
And that's the thing that people need Correct. To understand. And Correct. I'm not defending yeah. police
no,
brutality.
No, you're not.
So don't
no,
stop me in the grocery store talking about whatever. I'm saying whatever you imagine, whatever you think on the outside.
Let me just break it down for what Babs is actually saying is if you're...
Are you mansplaining for me?
Yes, I am. If you're going in and out of traffic... If you're going in and out of traffic with joint hanging out your... mouth and a cop see you and you ran a red light and got pulled over, it's not
police brutality,
all right? I'm with you,
but
right?
if he
it's not profiling.
If he drags you out your car, beat your ass, we clearly see that
solved it, which is what always happens on Pundit Friday on WNHHFM.
That's what we do. 5, we solve problems.
Live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We got Babs Rolls Ivy, Keisha Ricks, and Joe Ugly running down the
stories. Define it. Mansplaining. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Mansplaining for Babs.
Thank you.
That's all my right. job today.
I don't have that on your list of names.
Please
have
add
to work
it.
That in the next time.
The mansplainer.
Mansplainer.
The mansplainer.
That's right.
Y'all are stupid.
So Tony Harper's in the middle of budget tour 2018.
Yes.
She's getting ready for the next budget season to try to avoid having the freak out of the community when they just announced 11% tax increase and everyone freaked, you know, to this day is still mad about it. She's trying to explain how the budget works.
She was on my program this morning explaining
how
it.
How'd she do?
She did a great job explaining yeah. it. Yeah, she did. She broke it down and I got a better understanding of yeah. it.
So she's doing that at every management team meeting, the most grassroots way you can do it. She's going to every neighborhood.
Good for her.
Markeisha has been watching her visit different places, different kinds of management teams. She went to Westville. Mm-hmm. She went to New Hallville. I think you saw her somewhere else. What are you seeing? Is this tour evolving, Markeisha? Another leading question, and if so, how?
It is an evolving tour. I got to see it in Westville, and then I got to see it again in action in New Hallville. Mm-hmm. And
what changed?
She kind of changed up the presentation in the sense that this has been a 40-minute presentation in some places with like no real time to actually ask questions, and so people were like, what? But in New Hallville, she started out with like, you know, let's just start with talking like what's good, like what's happened in the 5 years that our administration has been in office. What's good has happened in New Hallville, and they have a lot of like successes.
Sounds like a campaign speech.
Does sound like a campaign speech.
But I'm going to say,
That's not bad.
She's going to be running.
I asked her about that on the program this morning. She said she's thinking about it.
Thinking about what?
About running.
For what?
Yeah.
Thinking about. Okay. For governor? For president?
No.
For what?
Mayor?
No,
she just
don't
know.
So. Candidate speak. Yeah. So one thing I've been wondering, I also read Tom Breen's article about the Worcester Square visit she had.
Yep.
I never see anyone talking about what I think is the elephant in the room.
Which is?
So we decided last year to do something that only communities that are heading toward bankruptcy
borrowing
do
to cover
and get
our
their, Mm-hmm. They borrow lots of money long term to cover operating expenses.
That has not,
not
come
to build
up.
Something. So we went $160 million long term into debt to get a few years of a break of like $30 million a year to plug budget holes. I think that I don't understand why people aren't bringing that up, because that's the
and
thing
that
could
that
kill
is,
the city. That's
and that
got
is
Hartford
what
in trouble.
Ken Joyner, in his own way, was bringing
right,
that up, because he's basically accusing them of overspending.
Based
and
on
not,
the article, you're right.
Exactly, but, and overspending and not like actually budgeting for their true expenses, understanding that they're not going to get, like, they can go on forever. Because that's, so this is my other observation, is that these conversations with the community about the budget come across, at least to some of the people that I talk to, as if the city is not taking responsibility for its own actions, instead of, oh, it's Yale's fault because they don't pay taxes. And then they had, I saw that change where they had to admit that Yale is our, you know, in spite of the fact that they don't pay taxes, they are still our largest employer, Yale and Yale
biggest
Hospital,
taxpayer
and our biggest taxpayer,
and they've upped
of the
how
taxes
much
that
they
pay.
Us in right. other
and they,
stuff.
They've upped their voluntary
and
payments.
And if they didn't have those buildings, they wouldn't be creating
exactly.
taxes.
Exactly. So right. that changed it. Like, that changed from what I understood someone had seen in a previous presentation. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you keep hearing more and more about the state. Well, the state just doesn't give us what they're supposed to give
which
us.
Which is true.
Which mm-hmm. pisses the people off who represent the city from the state. Because they're like, because that dust up with, I think it was Matt Nimmerson and Martin Looney. Where they're like, New Haven is getting, it's bigger, getting a bigger share than a lot of places. Because we go up there and fight for what you do get. So don't bite the hand that feeds you.
But no, just because you're fighting don't mean that you can't keep swinging. I mean, at the end of the day, when you
but
look at the amenities...
But don't swing at your own team is what they're saying.
What's wrong with motivating the team?
They're not motivating you, because they're like, we could figure out other ways to spend that money. Like, if it's like, we can make other deals, because let's be clear, we have our own budget problems.
So separate from that question about whether you press the state or not, I hear from other taxpayers saying, we agree with you. The state should give us more money. But the state's not giving us more money. Keep
so
pushing.
Why don't you?
But in the meantime, why don't we budget for not getting
for
the money,
have.
And then when we get
understand.
More money, spend that.
Yep.
Understand, but that don't mean that we keep, you see, the minute we stop talking about it is the minute they stop doing
that
it.
That is the tricky thing. So like, if you're not pushing them.
Exactly. Yeah.
But if you do a budget based on money you're not going to have, then you're going to be in
that's
trouble.
That's American, ain't it?
That's Trumpian.
Yeah.
But then
Trump
declares bankruptcy.
That's not just Trumpian. That's been around for a minute. That's
you're
why
right.
we have such a deficit.
You're
but
right.
then it becomes, how do we offset this deficit? How do we fix this stuff? You don't take that off the table. Like, for example, I just found out, reading your article, that amenities for restaurants, goes to the state. The city don't get any
right,
of that
and the
taxes.
City wants like a 1% surcharge, which
and
I've heard Republicans
but that,
approve.
That yeah. was a that has been a, when I was an alderman that was brought up. I mean,
mm-hmm. yeah, and you see what happened when it went
was,
away when
it
no
was
one's
hotels,
talking about it.
Right. It was restaurants,
exactly.
And this was at the height of when all these restaurants started showing up, and we were like, we ought to really.
And
get,
no
get a piece of that.
And they
then,
stopped talking about it, right?
Yes.
And what happened?
And 1%
went
sales
off the
tax,
table.
Yeah. And people yeah. heard
went
that.
Right off the table. You got to keep talking about it. And you got to go after yeah. this thing. You got to keep pushing this stuff.
I would bet that there are more people that eat in this town.
Absolutely.
Not
from
in this town.
From the suburbs mm-hmm. all
right?
the time.
I mean,
see, I'd rather plug our budget gaps that way rather than long-term
me
spending
too.
That's going to cost
right.
a
you
bonding
know,
that's going to cost
I,
us more.
I feel like we should tap into all of that because that's only going to grow.
But I guess for me, it seems like a great place with this, because I understand what they're doing in the sense that, like, they really do need to get in front of this kind of speeding train narrative of people with pitchforks over the raised taxes. they're behind the curve on that. I think what they, as they evolve the presentation, they have to get better at being able to say, you know, like, talk more about the things that they are doing to get a hold on it. And it's they aren't, they're missing the mark, I think, when it comes to capturing it, what it is people care about,
and in a
because
short
you can,
soundbite.
And not even just in a short, even if you want to take a long time and explain it, be like, this is this, but if you can say, here's $40 million and here's how we saved it, like,
right.
people are like, I'm sorry, what? And,
no,
and how
have,
did that work
yeah.
out to, like, you have to be able to say that.
Right.
And so capturing that narrative of what people care about in terms of, like, we are changing the way we budget. Like, get more into those finer details. We are going to do what you said and not borrow any more money to cover our spending. We are going to, like, this is how we're realigning government, and that literally saves us this amount of money every year.
Okay. Like, it sounds like the,
get
they need
there.
A-
you need to get down to those talking points, giving people a ginormous, people like us, because we're nerdy about that kind of stuff. We like to hear it.
Markeisha ought to be the communications director for the city of New Haven.
I've told you, girl. Here you go.
I'm like a ninja.
She can help spin their message because God knows they need somebody to spin that
message. But you know, that's a Democratic problem. Here, look, that's a Democrat problem. Democrats have a problem. You know,
they do.
Republicans,
they don't give a damn what the message is. Right. And it's a lying message, and they will put it out there shiny and bright with the bow.
Republicans are great campaigners, terrible governors. They can't govern to save their life. Why? Because when it gets down to the nitty-gritty of all the how it works, they don't know. But since the Democrats know how it works, if you could just fine-tune your message.
Be aware of who's in the room.
Don't criticize the state when there's a state representative sitting in the room. Like, don't do that.
Because if I'm the state rep, I'm going to go back and be like, let me show you what I can do and what I will do.
Well, let me tell you, you got an election coming.
Yeah.
So let me remind you what you did when you went back.
No, this would be that bold to go into somebody's neighborhood and see a state rep sitting there and then slam the state about what they don't give up. I wouldn't do that.
Well, sometimes you have to.
There's one gripe.
I wouldn't do that.
That City Hall.
Because you don't have to is what I'm saying.
There's one gripe. The City Hall.
In that context, the people in that room weren't mad at the state. No, they're mad at the city.
They're mad at the city.
If you blame the city and don't take responsibility for what you do,
okay. So
people see that and they don't buy it.
I hear what
I'm just telling you what I know.
But you raised the point. Here's the point. Did they not take responsibility of what they did?
No.
Okay, so
here's the point. Did they take responsibility? Did I write that the Hartman administration went in and said, you know, we've been spending money in a way that is not wrong or illegal, but we can do better?
Okay, we could do
better.
They didn't come out swinging like that.
Okay, how you get in front of something.
Right.
That's how you get on the offense instead of the defense.
I saw people, you need a communications director.
I saw people being defensive is what I saw.
I'm just telling you what I observed. I could agree with that.
Right. I could agree with that being defensive is always a problem. You never get on the defense. However, if you don't sit down.
I'm listening. Just because I'm drawing doesn't mean I'm listening. I'm like, who's the lady with the hat, Dorothy Height, who used to knit while she would listen to people?
Yeah.
Or Nancy Ahern. I'm taking in everything you're saying.
What were you saying, Paul?
Nancy Ahern.
Oh, yeah.
Used to knit, too. Well, you know, there's something that both sides agree on that they bitch about against state. I'm with them 1,000%. That we have a broken bus system. We've been telling.
Oh my God!
But it came in the news this week.
It's so true, though.
It came in the news this week. So Dan Malloy, for all his virtues, he just deny it's true.
I'm so sick of this bus conversation.
This is a good one, though.
But it came up this week, Babs, in a really important way. So the state's been denying it for years. We've been pushing them to have our roots reflect where people actually go and when, rather than what they did in 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually go to a job or school.
You know, actually make it work for you.
So. They always thought, oh, it's fine. But then after 10 years of studying it, they put a big report saying, hey, we rode your buses. They're a mess. We got to fix it. No sense how they're going to do it, right? So
study about it.
Out of the blue, this now endangers a big idea about how to change healthcare in New Haven.
Hmm?
So Yale New Haven Hospital decided to join forces with our two great neighborhood clinics, Fairhaven and Cornell Scott Hill Health. They had an idea, which has plus and minuses in the public mind, of getting primary care all under one roof and having the neighborhood centers run it on Long Wharf.
On Long Wharf.
Where no buses go. 150
Sergeant.
And they say, some buses go.
My surgeon
and I remember I was on Long Wharf where that was, where a lot of people work on Long Wharf.
They do.
And it was rush hour. And there were only every 45 minutes in rush hour. And you couldn't know whether the bus came or not because that app they spent millions trying to build doesn't work with an 18-year-old could have built. So I didn't know if a bus had just come or not.
Somebody a district could have built.
So and then I have a body and the weather was
homies
good.
On a corner.
Primary care is for low-income people
also, yes.
who need to see a doctor who might not get around so easy. So when it's raining, they're going to have to spend an hour or more, go out in the rain, walk blocks, try to catch buses.
Or when it's snowing.
And you know, that's all moving from neighborhood primary care centers where they could walk there. So they had a hearing about this week, and I think it's going to go through, and I think overall is a smart idea about how to make these clinics use their expertise and help them be viable in the future. They know how to swing with changing times to both, you know, how healthcare changes and funding changes to try to stay alive. But this the big concern at this hearing, 3.5 hours, Tom Breen has a great article.
It was all about
the buses. And Yale New Haven's response was, which I understand, we're working on that. But they say, you know, this is going to go up in 10 months. We've been working on it 10 years, and the state hasn't done anything. I just wonder whether the state's ever going to, because the State Department of Transportation has done a lot for train riders that who go to
and they're not
county,
happy.
And no, they're
lot,
not.
The done train a lot riders for are not happy. White collar bus riders at the state capitol with their busway they built, but they continue not to just let people get from point A to B with any ease in New Haven with the buses. And listen, now I see how this affects bigger decisions.
This is what I feel. I feel you cannot talk about viable economic development and not talk about transportation on any level, on every level. And buses are the grassroots of all of that, right? Do you know how many people who public transportation could be such a bond for this part, for this city?
And particularly if you want to talk about employment.
They've cared a lot about the wealthier commuters. We had many press conferences by the governor in his 8 years at Union Station. Not a single one about buses in New Haven. And many press conferences about the Q Bridge for suburban
drivers. But they have no problem with building parking lots every damn where.
Cut back
for commuters and all this other kind of stuff.
And roads.
So we're bitching. We agree on that one. What do you think, Joe Ugly?
No, I'm just thinking of an good infrastructure build is definitely needed. You know, it's like, but that's on the national level, good God. But,
so I came away with two things, and I've told Paul this, I'll share it with you all. Yeah. I came away with two things from that, from the Longworth story. One, I was like, so are they really going to shunt poor people away from the nice hospitals downtown?
Oh, absolutely.
To Longworth? Oh. Okay, one. Two, is this not a good time for Yale New Haven to do the heavy, Yale New Haven Hospital to do the heavy lifting for the city and go to Yale University because they have that relationship?
Use
and say,
the
hey,
shuttle.
Y'all have a great shuttle system. Can we borrow that?
That would be a yes on the first thing,
you know,
and a no on the second thing.
You know what's
interesting
about the thing about the nice shiny downtown? Someone else gave me that theory too, which might be true, saying they want to use their existing facilities for upscale patients. But in truth,
look at that Smilo Center. You damn right they want to use it.
That Smilo Center is nice. I've been in there.
Long Wharf is a more attractive location for wealthier patients, all of whom have cars. Because that's right
that's
off the highway with easy free parking.
Oh,
you got to go downtown. It's a pain in the butt.
You and I,
we are thinking in the right way. But no,
but
they're marketers. So I'm saying, I'm not saying you're wrong with that theory. You might be right. But I'm not sure because I don't know that it makes sense from a marketing point, from their point of view, to try to get a downtown how to park in older building for their wealthier customers. Or the shiny, nice, right off the highway, big parking lot on and off Longworth
building. I didn't say it had to make sense. I just said that's what I think they're going to do. And they put a lot of money.
Make sense.
They spent a lot of money in that little area over there. And
also, not for nothing, since I've been in that hospital a couple times this year, they valet your parking. So the only hardship is getting to the parking.
Yeah.
Other than that, you don't even have to pay for it.
Yeah. So... And listen, they spent a lot of money maneuvering that community, that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They spent a lot of money. That's a lot more money than they would have to spend on the Long Wharf. Water view be damned. Listen, if they could put up some structure to keep all the little poor people going to wherever and keep them out of their little...
I think you're right. And it's not a bad idea.
Because
Public
housing has been in places that were not considered attractive.
Right.
Then you fast forward 40, 50 years, and now these places are attractive.
Yep.
Right.
And now they want to push them out.
You have to go somewhere else now. You have to go.
It's like, oh, it's so nice and quiet out here, the edges of town.
Yeah.
Yes.
Burn grant, $1 million to New Hallville. We're halfway through spending it to make it safer. How's it going, Markeisha?
Looks like it's going swimmingly. They got, I can't think of the acronym, like what the words stand for. Can you help me? Like, I wrote it down. Like, when I write it down, I remember it, but it's called LISC, which is the kind of an organization.
Low Income Support Corporation, I think. No?
No, I don't think that's right.
Anyway, it's a national group for all young
local initiative support corporation. Yes.
And it's a nonprofit that gets a lot of
government
money. Oh, God,
this town is nonprofit heavy.
Oh,
man.
It's not a local group.
It's not a local group.
It's a national group.
But they kind of keep an eye and provide technical service to the people who are operating the burn grant. And so they gave New Haven thumbs up for, like, even though there's been, like, what we've been allowed to cover, it seems, is the infighting over the grant. But they've actually used the grant to kind of drill down, and good things are up in New Hallville. Crime is down. Mm-hmm. Gun violence is down in New Hallville. The range is quiet. Like, there are good things happening in New Hallville. And I remember when I first moved here 4 years ago, people were like, girl, be careful. I was like, wait, what? And I'm always very conscious to not malign people's communities.
And I might have been one of them people.
But I'm very careful not to malign people's communities because what I'm cognizant of is that there are people who live there forever and the only way I'm leaving here is on a stretcher.
Right.
And I don't plan on it being from a straight bullet. I mean, I died of a good old age. And so, good things are happening. Like, they did a spinoff of the USTAT program to have a new hall-specific USTAT for young people, like young school-age kids and older kids.
Yep.
Out of the 17 older people that they're helping who are like 17 to 26,
mm-hmm.
They only had two reoffend, which is pretty good.
Okay.
So, like, they have a lot going for themselves. And so, like, they got the thumbs up. They're like, keep doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, hold each other accountable. Make sure the money continues to be spent in the community by groups with a connection to the community, because those folks will do that work.
Yep. Right.
So.
And that's what makes
us. So, shout out to the Burger Grant.
That makes a good city good. Makes absolutely. The community good.
And that's the word. On the week just ended in New Haven, Connecticut, as seen by the pundits who do not predict. Pundit Friday.
That's why we're good pundits.
Listen, I've always been on black women, let me tell you.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Pundit Friday.
Black women, I'm with you, huh?
It's always the height of my week dealing with the best pundits in the media universe, including this week, Babs Rolls Ivy, Joe Ugly.
What's my new title?
Mansplainer.
Okay. And the star of all the stars in our constellation, Markeisha Ricks.
We missed you, Norma.
No.
Thank you.
Harry didn't join us too. Harry must be like, I'm tired of that.
We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. We know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book your flight all weekend long here on WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.